acciones. Todo parecía muy bien, pero nuevas presiones que van de modo transversal, desde la derecha al Partido Socialista, buscan restaurar más o menos las mismas atribuciones para la nueva Cámara. Esto desvirtuaría el sentido original del acuerdo, y esta semana se rumoreaba que probablemente la propuesta sería rechazada en la plenaria de la Convención, lo que obligaría a retomar el tema desde cero. Ciertamente, un notable retroceso que a su vez repercute sobre la percepción que el trabajo de la Convención tiene en la ciudadanía. La derecha, a través de los medios que controla prácticamente sin contrapeso, ha estado divulgando toda clase de historias, muchas de ellas falsas, para crear en la ciudadanía una atmósfera de incertidumbre respecto de qué constitución se estaría redactando. Con esto se busca crear las condiciones para que en el plebiscito en que se someta a votación, fijado para el 4 de septiembre, los electores voten por el rechazo a la nueva constitución. Esta campaña ya empieza a dar sus frutos para la derecha, ya que recientes encuestas muestran un incremento en la intención de votar por el rechazo a la nueva constitución. Naturalmente, el destino del nuevo texto constitucional está fuertemente ligado al del actual gobierno chileno presidido por Gabriel Boric, ya que él y el movimiento del que hace parte fue el que bregó por el cambio constitucional. Una derrota del proyecto constitucional sería, además, una derrota de todo el proceso de rebelión popular iniciado en octubre de 2019. En este sentido, las fuerzas progresistas chilenas deben redoblar sus esfuerzos para lograr los acuerdos necesarios en la redacción de la nueva Constitución, un texto que en definitiva posiblemente no va a dejar contentos a todos, ni siquiera a todos los que la apoyan. Pero es lo que ocurre en un proceso inédito de producir de un modo democrático un texto constitucional. Un esfuerzo de tal importancia no puede perderse al último momento por incapacidad de las fuerzas progresistas por alcanzar acuerdos. The Weekly Review. The difficult road to a new constitution in Chile. When, as a result of the social outburst in Chile in 2019, the political forces reached an agreement for the drafting of a new constitution for that country, they opened a path that, on the one hand, contained the hopes of the majority of citizens, but on the other hand, it meant walking an unknown path and that at times seems to introduce elements of uncertainty and confusion. By the way, these aspects in turn are exploited by the political sectors that, from the beginning, were against the idea of changing the constitution. These are the sectors that have benefited from the constitution imposed by the dictatorship in 1980, and that if the project currently being drafted by the Constitutional Convention is not approved, would continue to be in force. An unusual phenomenon occurred when the vote was taken to elect the members of this constitutional convention. Together with the representatives of political parties, there was an important part, rather a majority, of members belonging to independent lists or and grassroots organizations. For the first time in Chile, there was also gender parity among the members of the convention and seats reserved for representatives of native peoples. This new panorama, certainly a more accurate representation of the Chilean population, on the other hand, introduced an element of unpredictability, and what was to be the political or ideological alignments regarding the main points of the future constitution. While aspects such as the plurinational character of the Chilean state were easily agreed upon, as well as declarative aspects of the character of the state, its decentralization and the universality of health services and its role in education, A point that has remained until this week a stumbling block is that of the political system itself, particularly in reference to the legislative branch. At first, the idea of having a unicameral Congress gained some support. The idea was to simplify the legislative procedure, since the Chamber of Deputies and the Senate exercise more or less the same functions in an unnecessary and costly duplication, not to mention that the Senate had become infamous for the practice of some of its members acting as true lobbyists for large companies. As a compromise, an agreement was reached between center and left sectors to maintain what was called an asymmetric bicameralism. That is, that together with the Chamber of Deputies, there would be a Chamber of the Regions, with powers limited to issues concerning the regions. Everything seemed fine, but new pressures, ranging from transversally from the right wing to the Socialist Party, seek to restore more or less the same powers for the new chamber. This will distort the original sense of the agreement, and this week it was rumored that the proposal will probably be rejected in the plenary of the convention, which will force to take up the issue again from scratch. Certainly a notable setback that in turn has repercussions on the perception that the work of the convention has among citizens. The right wing, through the media it controls practically without counterweight, has been spreading all kinds of stories, many of them false, to create an atmosphere of uncertainty as to what the Constitution will contain, the Constitution that's being drafted. This is intended to create the conditions so that in the plebiscite to be held on September 4th, voters reject the new Constitution. This campaign is already beginning to bear fruit for the right wing, since recent polls show an increase in the intention to vote for the rejection of the new Constitution. Naturally, the fate of the new constitutional text is strongly linked to that of the current Chilean government presided by Gabriel Boric, since he and the movement of which he is a member were the ones who fought for the constitutional change. A defeat of the constitutional project will also be a defeat of the whole process of popular rebellion initiated in October 2019. In this sense, the Chilean progressive forces must redouble their efforts to achieve the necessary agreements in the drafting of the new constitution, a text that in the end is possibly not going to leave everyone happy, not even all those who support it, but it is what happens in an unprecedented process of producing in a democratic way a constitutional text. An effort of such importance cannot be lost at the last moment due to the inability of the progressive forces to reach agreements. Good day.
Divina, qué gentil cultura es con tu fragante sutileza. Rosa divina, qué gentil cultura es con tu fragante sutileza. Magisterio purpuro en la belleza, enseñanza negada en la hermosura. Magisterio purpuro en la belleza, enseñanza negada en la hermosura. Abajo de la humana arquitectura, ejemplo de la vana gentileza. Abajo de la humana y triste sepultura, cuyo ser unió naturaleza, la cuna alegre y triste sepultura. Cuán nativa en tu pampa, presumida, soberbia, riesgo de morir de besitos perezos. Rosa divina, te miro al espejo a través de los siglos y tus versos. Estrella blanca, luz en un camino, tus huellas, tu sabio, dulce y fino. Estrella blanca, luz en un camino.
Bueno, ahora vamos al fichero latino de hoy, 10 de abril del 2022. Entre los anuncios de interés público tenemos dosis de refuerzo de la vacuna contra el COVID-19. Están abiertas las inscripciones para vacunarse con la tercera dosis a las personas que tengan 18 años y más. La provincia también ha anunciado que se empezará a dar la segunda vacuna de refuerzo o cuarta dosis a los mayores de 60 años. Consultar y reservar en línea en el sitio web Clip Sante, en inglés o en francés.
Y eventos. Concierto de la pianista Alejandra Cifuentes Díaz en el ciclo Un recital de piano sur les chandelles, con obras de Chopin y Liszt. Viernes 29 de abril a las 20 horas en la iglesia Saint-Denis. Esto es frente al metro Laurier. Admisión $35. Para información, llamar al 514-774-9148.
Concurso convocado por la Feria Iberoamericana del Libro Canadá. Se llama a participar a escritores de poesía o de ficción, así como artistas visuales, para la publicación de un libro de alta calidad. Todos los que formen parte de esta publicación única en su género, además de ser publicados en el primer gran libro ilustrado de arte y literatura latino-canadiense y de llegar a un gran público, estarán apoyando las iniciativas de la Feria Iberoamericana del Libro en Canadá.
El plazo para presentar trabajos es el 30 de abril de 2022. Para mayor información, escribir a hispaniccanadian@gmail.com.
En lo que respecta a publicaciones, las ediciones en francés, en inglés del libro Presencia chilena en la Belle Provence, Présence chilienne en la Belle Provence, Chilean Present en la Belle Provence, se hallan a la venta en la librería de la Universidad de Montreal, en el 3200 de la calle Jean Riant, en la librería Bertrand, en el 430 de Saint-Pierre, esto es en el viejo Montreal, en el internet, en la cadena Renaudet, en la librería Argos, en el 1841A, de San Caterín Oeste, y en la librería Paragraph, esto es en el 2220 de McGill College Avenue. El precio es de $10 más impuestos.
El tiempo para hoy, según Environment Canada, la Oficina Meteorológica Nacional de Canadá, nublado con una temperatura máxima de 6 grados. Para esta noche, periodos de nubosidad con una mínima de 3 grados.
Recuerde que si usted o su organismo comunitario tienen alguna información que desean difundir en el fichero latino, solo tienen que comunicarse con nosotros a Latin Time a nuestra dirección electrónica, laplaza.info@gmail.com.
O también puede enviarnos un mensaje en Facebook. Vaya a www.facebook.com/tiempolatino.latintime y de paso denos un like. Nuestra página Facebook también se actualiza ahora diariamente con noticias y reportajes sobre lo que ocurre en América Latina y el mundo. Síganos en Facebook.
Y Tiempo Latino es escuchado en América Latina y en todo el mundo a través del internet. Entre al sitio de CKUT en la siguiente dirección, www.ckut.ca.
Y usted puede acceder también a nuestro programa en cualquier otro horario, simplemente yendo al archivo de CKUT en el sitio web ya indicado y presionando Latin Time.
La gata acostada en la cama, araña que teje casa en la rama, no sos un ángel. Subís el volumen y aumenta el abismo, vuelan las almas vestidas de ángel. Y todo el control lo tiene la naturaleza. La mano se mueve a distancia precisa, tu cuerpo se deja tocar por la brisa, la guerra y la calma. La música acaba de ser dibujada y escucho los gritos llegando en el mismo momento. Hay millones de mundos girando locos en la ciudad, sos uno de ellos, me enredo en tu cuello.
que teje casa en la rama, no sos un ángel. Subís el volumen y aumenta el abismo, vuelan las almas vestidas de ángel.
de pie entre abismos de palabras. La voz que pudiera alzar se desgrana en ecos infinitos, besando grises lunares. De pie entre caminos sin regreso, el paso que pudiera andar se hunde en sendas enlodadas, salpicando tristes lunas. Como la mar que canta al silencio, como el mar que castiga las rocas, como la vez de espuma y de sal, los recuerdos vuelven y se van. Como el mar sigue los orillos duros, como el mar rompiendo en la noche el silencio negro invernal, los recuerdos vuelven y se van.
Y esto ha sido todo por hoy. Tiempo Latino es una producción del Taller Latinoamericano de Comunicaciones.
Latin Time is a Latin American Communications Workshop production.
Estuvimos hoy con ustedes.
Our team today.
Daniel Lara y Sergio Martínez en las voces.
Sergio Martínez and Daniel Lara at the mics.
Y Rommel Cajavilca en la producción técnica, la compaginación y la selección musical.
And Rommel Cajavilca in the technical production, edition and music selection.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT, nuestro próximo programa, The International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT, next, The International Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
I'm David Bachner of Guelph, Ontario, and I get my weekly radio news on the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Welcome, everyone, to the International Radio Report for Sunday, April the 10th, 2022. My name's Sheldon. I am here with Jill, and we thank you for tuning in to our weekly 30 minutes of news and information about the world of radio. We have an email address if you'd like to reach us, radioreport@yahoo.com. We're live streaming and archived at ckut.ca. Our Facebook group, International Radio Report, 751 members. We welcome Maurizio and Fran to our group. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for International Radio Report. And our YouTube channel, where you can go and listen to past editions of the program, is simply youtube.com/International Radio Report, and we'd love it if you subscribe to our channel there as well. So today we have a little bit different program. We normally have a bunch of stories from the news around the world of things going on in the world of radio. Today, though, is going to be more of we get to vent a little bit of commentary from our part. And I guess what sparked all of this was a commentary that came out earlier this week in Radio World, an online radio-related magazine and news service that we quote from quite a bit, actually, if you're probably familiar with it. There was a commentary that they ran this week, written by Daniel Robinson and Keith Perron, headlined, "Why Reviving Shortwave is a Non-Starter," a commentary on why calling shortwave revival is wishful thinking. Now, what sparked all of this is the sudden increase in the number of international broadcasters who either have increased certain types of programming aimed at Ukraine or countries around Ukraine, all as a result of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. and some other stations that were gone from shortwave who've suddenly returned to shortwave using not necessarily their own transmitting facilities, but independent private shortwave transmitters where they can purchase time and broadcast their programming. Now, this sort of sparked, I guess, this certainly an interest within the shortwave listening community. They, you know, we don't like to use the word hobbyists, but we are referred to that in many cases.
Yeah.
Because we listen for different purposes, for different reasons. Maybe not a good segment of that community, not only or maybe not even listening to content, but listening just for the fact of being able to hear a station, to write a reception report to them, get a QSL card. These are the DXers, as we call them. But that's only a fraction of our community. And the rest of it are people that we call SWLs, or shortwave listeners. They tune in, they listen, they consume the product that is being transmitted over radio. I think there was a little bit of a surge in enthusiasm and interest in, wow, you know, we've lost so many shortwave stations over the years. All of a sudden, something's coming back. Is this a revival? For some reason, this commentary seems to think that it's a revival, or that they think that others think it's a revival.
I've had so many of that comment of not necessarily using revival, but saying, well, is that a shortwave comeback? Kind of, you know, different way of saying the same thing. And one of the things that I was mentioning this week is, I think what we have to be careful here is, like, it's not a revival. It's broadcasters, it's a lot of people realizing that for a while things were quiet. World events weren't big enough to really think about shortwave broadcasting as a way of giving information. And suddenly a big event, Russia invades Ukraine, we suddenly hear all of these things about how Russian media and the Russian government is actually blocking Western news over the internet. Or, you know, things like that will be happening also in Ukraine. If they advance, when they take more control, they'll have more control over what is the internet, because a lot of people think the internet is the way today to give news. Yes, it is, until somebody gets in and decides that, you know what, we can play with those on-off switches, the ones that will decide what you will be hearing and what we decide that you can hear. And stations like the BBC, for example, that added hours of broadcasting, suddenly realized, oh, I think it would be important to add something more. I think they are suddenly realizing that maybe we've been wrong in thinking that we should shift our focus on other types of media too much. Not that it's a bad thing, but it's the fact that they did take some of the resources, put them into online stuff, and it's fine, until an event like that happens, and suddenly nobody can hear what you're saying anymore over that internet media. You need to have something else, and shortwave is great for that.
Yeah, nobody seems to be talking about the, you know, there was a word that was used a lot as stations were migrating from conventional radio broadcasting to online streaming, internet access to broadcasts, podcasts, what have you. And the word was gatekeepers. And I haven't seen anybody really bringing that word up recently. Gatekeepers meaning that there are people that can turn on and turn off those other types of services. If you're fortunate enough to live in a place where you have some sort of internet service, maybe unlimited internet service, you have all these fancy devices of smartphones and access to all these different technologies, but there are many people who don't. And as much as those people who use all those devices think that everybody does, they're wrong. There are reportedly millions of people on the planet today who have yet to make their very first telephone call. You know, these people wonder where their if they have electricity, where it might be coming from. Will it be there every day? Do they have TV service? Do they have regular radio service? Do they have newspapers? Do they have running water? You know, all these luxuries that we so take for granted, that we have our internet and we can access all this stuff. Satellite communications. Yeah, great. Until somebody turns it off. The radio has been proven for over 100 years now that if the signal goes out, somebody's going to be able to hear it with a very inexpensive piece of equipment.
There are reasons why that radio signal needs to be there, and there are people out there that know it's important to do so. We were talking about, on one side, you know, no access to internet. A lot of people, I mean, I read an article a couple of months back about the only computer in a small village in one of the African countries. It's like, yeah, there's one computer with internet access that amazes everybody, but I mean, the village, you know, needs to go there to have that access. They don't have it at home, and a lot of people do not have the luxury of having internet at home. Anyways,
It's an internet cafes or what have you, you know, those things still exist out there.
And one of the things that shows that is, look at how many of the government groups or any types of anti-government groups, whatever you want, political groups, rent airtime, like from the France transmitter site, to broadcast to their own country because they know somebody's out there listening, and this is a great way to get there. And you add Ukraine that now, well, maybe we need to have the same kind of broadcast because somebody is listening. And there are people listening. One of the biggest problems that I have with that article, which is very negative, is who cares? What does it matter that somebody puts up a shortwave transmitter? You know, it's just a good thing. And let it be. There's nothing good in being negative of why should we do this. Also, the radios out there, I'm sure there's a lot more people than we actually think. It's difficult to get numbers on shortwave. We talk about it all the time. Very difficult to know how many people exactly are listening out there.
You know, I responded to this commentary that Dan Robinson and Keith Perron wrote, and they make some really odd comments in it, you know, about how many people are out there, that the technology, you know, that the radios aren't out there anymore, that maybe people that had radios back in the 70s and 80s don't have them anymore. I just don't think that's true. You do a search on Facebook for the word shortwave, for example, it yields literally dozens of active groups of users of shortwave radios. And they're not just in, you know, far off places. They're all over the world. Many of these groups have memberships reaching five figures. And these are people that are active. You look at the amount of information that's being posted on these pages. But what they're talking about on those pages is using radios. You know, they're listening and tuning to see what they can find. I really find it interesting, too, in the commentary that Dan Robinson, who did work for The Voice of America, and Keith Perron, who worked for a couple other independent other shortwave broadcasters, neither of them do work in the field any longer. They make no mention in their commentary about the amount of money that the United States alone today is spending on shortwave broadcasting. They have services like Radio Marti to Cuba, RFERL, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Radio Free Asia, all of which are using shortwave. And it's costing them a lot of money. I don't think the American population knows how much is being spent. They don't have that great knowledge of shortwave listening. I think if they knew how much was being spent on something that they know absolutely nothing about, they might be questioning, like, why are you doing this? Yet, the U.S. government thinks it's important enough to spend that money and to continue doing this. Also, those, you know, so many of those stations, as you mentioned, that are now using other shortwave transmitters from independent companies, they're taking what little money they may have left in their budgets, which usually comes from their governments, and taking it to spend to purchase airtime on old, ancient, dinosaur-type shortwave transmitters. Why would they be spending such valuable money on that shortwave broadcasting if they didn't think it was productive?
You know, I think about my own shortwave channel, 35,000 subscribers. And of the statistics, it seems that a big part of that is from the United States. And it's interesting because if you are subscribed to a shortwave channel, it's because you have an interest in shortwave radio.
Your channel, too, anybody that's listened to it knows that they're coming to your channel for one purpose.
Yep.
You talk about one thing, globally, and that's radio broadcasting using shortwave and other types of broadcasting on shortwave or on radio as well, AM and FM, what have you. But the attraction, what's drawing those people to your channel is shortwave radio. People today in 2022 coming to you and saying, I want to buy a shortwave radio. What do I buy? How do I use it? Why are they suddenly interested if it's not worth anything? Why is Texan manufacturing how many dozen models of radios and selling them all over the world?
Yep.
I'll read one comment here. A guy named Ken Zichi responded to the Robinson and Perron commentary, and he says, I actually find your opinion far more cogent, and you actually cite facts to support it. He goes on to say, I've gone 10 rounds with Mr. Perron, and despite claiming he had data, he refused to or claimed he couldn't share any of that data that proved that there were fewer than 300 or 400 shortwave listeners in North America. How do you possibly come out with a comment like that?
I have better statistics, even though they're not precise in how many different people we can kind of extrapolate from the numbers. I did have 250,000 views last month. 42.9% of the views are from the United States, according to the stats on YouTube. 77,000 unique people. So that means, of course, there are people coming back watching again and again. But 77,000 unique person also watched. So if there's 200 or 300 people in the United States, I have a hard time seeing the kind of numbers I see on my channel about shortwave radio that seem to indicate we're going to add zeros to that number.
if there's only 300 or 400 of them out there, those 300 or 400 people are spending an awful lot of time not listening to the radio and spending their time on your YouTube channel.
They're all there. I've got every single shortwave listener.
Man, it just doesn't make any sense, And we've talked. I mean, that's what our program is about. We give you information. We tell you things you can go listen to. We just, we've talked about it today already that, there are many of these shortwave broadcasters now that have come back on the air. Now, yes, a big major event is going on in the world, as you said, the war in Ukraine. But people need alternative sources of information. Yep. We know there's a lot of, how many times has Putin himself lately used the term fake news? I mean, we heard fake news all through the U.S. election campaign. We keep hearing that word all over the place. Well, you have to go out there and try to get as many different reports as you possibly can and get different sides of the same story. This is what attracted so many people to shortwave listening over the years. That you could get different opinions, different viewpoints from different parts of the world.
Yep.
I think, I would love to be able to understand Ukrainian and Russian right now because there are so many interesting broadcasts out there that I would love to listen to and understand, to really get a broader picture of what's going on in the world out there in relation to what's going on in Ukraine.
A very simple example that I had just last night that I think shows wherever you live around the world, every government has its little white lies, its little moment. Yesterday, Canada actually had its budget, and Justin Trudeau said that the amount of money we now had put in military for the future is equal to what Canada's contribution to NATO should be. An hour later, I hear BBC News. They're talking about Canada has its budget. And one of the items that they talk about is the increase in military spending of Canada, which is still not up to what we should be spending for a NATO member. And it's like, interesting, that point of view is different from the one of my own government. And we have that all over the place. And it's even worse if you live in a place where there's war and there's these really, bad controlling governments that just don't want you to know what the truth is, actually.
If you don't think shortwave broadcasting is still important, then what is China doing? You know, somebody wrote that. They said he was living overseas and working in Asia for a number of years and tuning across the shortwave band. China was everywhere. When Radio Australia gave up their frequencies and shut down their shortwave service, China was on those frequencies like a cat on a mouse. They just pounced them and grabbed them up so quickly because this was a way to reach millions of people.
Mm-hmm. It's like shortwave was in the 70s and 80s here in North America. There are stations every 5, 10 kilohertz. It's crazy.
Well, you spoke to someone from Texan a while back, and they told you that they're selling a million shortwave radios a year.
A million radios. So let's make a difference because it's not all shortwave. The majority of their models are shortwave.
Yeah.
But a million radios.
The fact that they're selling radios, period, is interesting when people are saying, you know, there's nobody listening to the radio anymore. Well, somebody's buying those radios, and they wouldn't be manufacturing that many models if they weren't able to sell them to somebody.
Even higher-end receivers, it's like people are buying radios somewhere.
Well, we're going to get back to this. We're going to take a short break, and Jill's going to tell you how poorly or how well you can actually listen to the radio because of what our sun does to our radios.
Yep. What's happening with our sun? Well, we had a mixed conditions this week with some coronal mass ejections that sometimes would actually give us conditions that would go into the minor geomagnetic storm. But most of the time, it was still pretty quiet. A little less sunspots than we had in the past few weeks. Sunspot number is 52. Solar flux, around 120. And conditions overall, it's up and down, but conditions overall are pretty good when things get a little quiet. There is a coronal hole that will actually send some solar wind that could reach us on April 11th. And overall conditions, average conditions will have, of course, more and more of these up and downs. You got to, take the time to listen and find these moments when you actually have good propagation. And of course, you got to turn on your radio for that because you got to listen.
We'll be having a special course on how to use a radio one of these days, I think, because, according to these commentaries, I don't know, people just don't use them anymore. And why would they want to? I just don't understand. A couple articles that we'll quote from, we'll put these full articles on our Facebook page so you can go and look at them. Also, this commentary that we started the discussion about. The BBC is turning 90 years old, the World Service, which is pretty interesting in itself. And in the article, they talk about, they've gone through a number of cutbacks over the years. There are some interesting trends happening, and they say in terms of target audience, the UK government's shift away from Cold War priorities combined with funding cuts compelled the BBC World Service to temporarily reduce its non-English programming. But they're glad to say that they are now back to more than 40 languages as of late 2021, including a range of African and Indian languages, Amharic, Gujarati, Igbo, Korean, Marathi, Pidgin, Punjabi, Serbian, Telugu, and Yoruba. So there are less European languages than 20 years ago, but important new languages for us, which have brought strong audiences and new and exciting people to work with. So that's really encouraging. New shortwave services have been launched in Korean, a 30-minute program broadcast to North Korea, and also programming for the Horn of Africa. So it's more target broadcasting than, which we actually call, we have a term for it, narrowcasting, as opposed to broadcasting. It's not meant for everybody worldwide, but it's more targeting specific programming and language programming for specific target areas, which is a really, really good thing. And now that's what we're seeing happening with Ukraine.
And they do say here, and I don't think the BBC just puts out a number just for the fun of it. In the first paragraph, British broadcasting alone has 40 million shortwave listeners worldwide. So they have, it's an estimation probably, but they have a good estimation of that number by all sorts of means with their big broadcasting service.
Yeah, they're in a fortunate position that they're able to do some stuff that other countries can't do, as far as gathering listener information and monitoring stations in different locations and what have you. So yeah, that's, you know, it's always been very difficult to get an accurate number of who's out there and who's listening. I mean, you know, we have rating systems here in North America that, you know, it's averaged out. I mean, you're never going to know exactly, you know, how many people are out there. Another article that we'll post up is by someone named Ruxandra Obreja on a service called redtech.pro. The headline basically says it all. Shortwave radio proves simple, powerful, and necessary. In the article, they go on to say about the in 22, after the banning of its popular Russian language websites and the persecution of journalists in Russia, the BBC quickly increased transmissions of the BBC World Service via shortwave.
Yep.
4 hours per day to ensure that people in affected parts of Russia and Ukraine can access the news service. So it tells you right there, you know, that the technology is there to use. They quote Jeff White as well. He's been approached by different countries to use their Radio Miami international transmitter site to put programming back on the air in targeted areas as well. I wanted to mention one thing. We talked about it. We've put out these documents called Focus on Ukraine that are giving people, you know, things to tune to, whether it's using your shortwave radio, using online SDR radios to tune to services in affected areas. I saw this article in today's Montreal Gazette headlined Russians Discussing Killing Civilians. And it comes from Berlin, the story. Germany's Foreign Intelligence Service says it has intercepted radio communications in which Russian soldiers discussing carrying out indiscriminate killings in Ukraine. They go on to say the reported cruelties have affected the members of the respective committees, where it was reported very strongly. Another person said that the agency, this is the Foreign Intelligence Gathering Service in Germany, had high confidence in the findings, though it was not specified about how it obtained the radio communications.
It has to do with turn on your radio and listen.
Doesn't it? I read this and I just, you know, that your comment was ringing in my ears that we put out there every week. It said reliance by Russian troops on unsecured communications devices, including smartphones and push-to-talk radios, has left their units vulnerable to targeting, Western defense and intelligence officials say. You know, I think we have an advantage, us old dinosaur shortwave listeners out there, in that we know this stuff is out there. We know how to get to it. Unfortunately, the language barrier really bothers me. It would be so great if we understood these transmissions that we can pick up in some cases. But there are people who can, using your radio or using online radios if you have access to those things, do understand the power of radio and the importance of it, especially when events like this are going on.
Yep, and we've got to be positive about it and not try to find reasons why we shouldn't have all of this happening and have transmitters on the air.
You know, that's a really good point to wrap it up, I think, is in that a couple of people have said, what is the goal of this commentary of trying to shoot down what people think is a positive thing?
Yeah.
I don't quite know what the agenda is, what the purpose of this is. I can only think, you know, like I said when I started my commentary in response to it, these are two people who used to work in the industry, work in the field of international broadcasting. Neither of them do any longer. I don't know if that has any impact on it. I'm not sure. The term sour grapes comes to my head. But I don't know. You know, just an opinion.
Yeah.
But anyways, check it out. See what you think. And we'd love to hear your comments on our Facebook page or email us radioreport@yahoo.com.
And well, since we talk a lot, we have to go quickly through the upcoming ham radio contests.
Yeah, we'll run through this quickly. Again, we will put them up on the page, but we do like to get these out you know, so you can still have some fun with radio as well if you're a ham operator, shortwave listener. So quickly, coming up next weekend, the Holy Land DX contest, April 15th through 16th, 2115th to 2116th, organized by the Israel Amateur Radio Club. It's SSB, CW, and digital, and it's on all the major HF bands.
Worked All Provinces of China DX Contest, April 16th, 06 Zulu to April 17th, 0559 Zulu, organized by the Mulan DX Club. It's SSB, and the band is 8040, 20, 15, and 10.
I guess you'd need to own a radio, though, to participate in these things.
I guess you have to.
So only 300 or 400 people in the U.S. could do this.
Yes.
According to those statistics. More commentary. organized by the Amateur Radio Union of Serbia, the YUDX contest, 0700 April 16th to 0659 Zulu April 17th, SSB and CW, 80 through 10 meters.
We have the CQMMDX contest, 09 Zulu April 16th, 2359 Zulu April 17th, organized by the Luis de Fora CW Group. Mode is CW, and it's 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10.
Michigan QSO Party, 1600 Zulu April 16th to 0400 Zulu April 17th, organized by the Mad River Radio Club, CW and SSB modes, 80 through 10 meters.
We have the Ontario QSO Party, 18 Zulu April 16th to 18 Zulu April 17th, organized by the Contest Club of Ontario, modes SSB, CW, and FM, and the bands 160 through 2 meters, except the work bands.
And finally, the for you low-powered ham operators, the Run for the Bacon QRP contest, 2300 Zulu April 17th to 0100 April 18th. It's organized by, get this, folks, the Flying Pigs QRP Clubs International. The mode is CW, QRP low-power only, 160 through 10-meter HF bands.
So you'll need a radio for all of that. So please do try to find one somewhere. And we are now out of time.
Aren't we a little sarcastic? Hey, we have a right to, we know what's going on out there, so we thought we'd share it with you. We do thank you for tuning in to us, maybe even on a radio, and we hope you will continue to do so and do so next week when we'll be back with our next edition of the International Radio Report on CKUT, which is a radio station in Montreal, 90.3 FM. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
United Nations.
Hey, your heart beats still. The air spilling into your lungs. You're still here, still alive. Free to roam, free to give, free to take, free to laugh, free to cry, free to love, and free to play. Free to feel the caress of a mountain, free to hear your name in the howling of the northern winds, free to be kissed by every snowfall, and free to see this world for all the many things it is. You, my friend, are free to live. You're free to live.